AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Buyers move back into the wheat and soybean markets today, helping corn and the soybean market build on this week's breakaway gains. And the spreads move today in both corn and soybeans. It looks like beans may have decided it's time to take the battle for 2021 acres to another level.
Live from a flurry of activity via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Andrew Jackson from Producers Hedge LLC. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flurry. Flory.
Are you doing a bit of a weather report and all this, too?
Yes, I'm working it in. I'm trying to make it seamless so we don't spend too much time, you know, talking needlessly, using words that are unnecessarily imprudent, pausing sentences. Is this knowing where you're at, bro?
Barely. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, it drizzled most of the morning.
Same here.
We are just starting to see a few snowflakes wrapped into the drizzle, but it's kind of a one of those mid-January days where you, I don't know, I'm kind of glad I'm inside today.
Yeah. You got your cocoa, you got your fuzzy slippers. I see what you got going.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I tell you what we got going today is new contract high closes, new contract highs in these markets. My gosh, big moves again today. Double-digit gains in the heaviest traded corn contracts, 20-plus cent gains in soybeans, big moves in wheat. An all-around impressive day in the grain markets again. And I got to say, the Dow is up 30 points.
Okay.
It's amazing to me how this equity market just shrugs things off and just keeps kind of marching along.
Mm-hmm.
The NASDAQ up 35 points. The S&P is higher today. It makes me wonder exactly what this market is looking at with such certainty to just keep trotting along to the upside. It's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. So, all right, man. We've got more of that snow coming, too, don't we? We're in that area where we should see 5-6 inches of accumulation, huh?
All right.
Wow.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Like that. Let's get to the news.
Export inspections of wheat in the weekend of January 7 totaled just over 232,000 metric tons. Chip, that fell short of trade expectations. Bang! Gladesh was at the top of the list of buyers, with Mexico and Malaysia also noted buyers. Export commitments of wheat are now 8% ahead of year ago compared to USDA's estimate that wheat exports will rise 2.1% from last year. March SRW wheat futures opened fractionally lower and fell through support at yesterday's low as the market searched for selling interest. Finding very little, wheat was a willing follower of corn and soybeans to the upside, with futures ending near session highs. March, hard red winter wheat, 10¾ cents higher, 636.5. March, soft red jumped 9.5 cents, 670. March, spring wheat, 11¾ cents higher, 640.5. Chip.
Yeah, the wheat market, as long as it moves along with corn and soybeans, It at least it wasn't an anchor on the markets today, and it could have been. It tried to be early in the day, but when we turned things around and started to push things to the upside, that's when soybeans really let go and took off to the upside.
Corn export inspections easily topped trade expectations. In the weekend of January 7, exporters sold more than 1.4 million metric tons of corn to Japan, unknown destinations, Colombia, Mexico, China, and El Salvador, all making the list of buyers. Export commitments are now 135% ahead of the year-ago pace. That compares to USDA's latest estimate that corn exports will climb about 43% from last year. March, corn futures opened slightly lower and into the upside price gap left on yesterday's open. The inability of bears to close the gap triggered a fresh round of buying, sending prices to a high range and contract high. Closed, and the I Told You So award goes to Jeff Wilson. If you caught the show on Tuesday, his comment was, well, we're going to gap higher on Wednesday and probably move higher from there. Today, yeah. March corn futures 9¾ cents higher, 5.34¼. May corn jumped a dime, 5.37¾. July corn closed at 5.34¾, up 10¾ today.
Yeah. Yeah. And yesterday's, I said it felt like corn market struggled, although it did close higher, confirming the big move that we saw on Tuesday. And into Wednesday, but just it felt like a struggle yesterday. Today, it didn't feel like a struggle. It felt like the buyers were back.
Old crop bean export sales of 908,000 metric tons easily topped trade expectations, and new crop sales of 326,000 tons were in line with trade guesses. The list of old crop buyers was topped by China, with Spain, Mexico, the Netherlands, and Pakistan also on the list. For the new crop sales, unknown destinations and China filled the sales bill. Export commitments are up 83% from last year compared to USDA's estimate of a 33% surge in sales. March bean futures opened nearly steady and near session lows and pushed to a high range and contract high close. Yep. March bean futures 24¼ cents higher, 14.30½. May beans up 24 to 14.27¾. July closed at 14.13¼, up 24¾ cents. Chip.
You know, and the momentum is clearly to the upside right now, and it is building. It feels like it today was in kind of a, you know, a natural swing. When you see a natural home run hitter, it looks like they're not trying to hit the ball.
Yet, oh, sure.
When they do hit the ball, it just flies out of the park. That's what today felt like. It just felt like an easy swing, solid connection, and boom, off went the bean market. So I'm encouraged by that. The ability of that corn, I shouldn't say the ability of the corn, but the willingness of traders to step into that March corn contract as it set back into the upside price gap that we left on Wednesday.
Yep.
And buy it and leave that gap open. That's that's awfully impressive, Davis, and it makes me think that, you know, we can weather some selling pressure, some profit taking in corn and soybeans right now, and not necessarily change the trend in those markets, at least for a while.
Well, Chip, old crop cotton sales easily topped trade expectations and tallied 326,000 running bales. China was right at the top of the list of buyers. March cotton, 20 ticks higher, 81.12. July, up 16 points, 82.69. Livestocks, beef export sales in the weekend of January 7 totaled nearly 17,000 metric tons. February futures opened slightly lower, fell to test support just above the Jan lows, then recovered to close back inside the opening range. February live cattle, 17½ cents lower, 112.07½. April off 25, 117.22½. March feeder cattle, 95 cents lower, 133.37½. And finally, on the snout side, pork export sales of nearly 24,000 metric tons were topped by sales to Mexico, Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, and Colombia. February lean hogs were 55 cents lower, 66.30. April hogs fell 87½, 72.07½. Chip.
Yeah, no China on that list of buyers there.
No
on
China.
The pork.
No China.
That's interesting. And yet we still got to 24,000 metric tons. That's a nice number. Mexico, obviously, as China's import needs start to decline in 2021, the U.S. market is going to be very focused on Mexico and making sure that we fill all of their needs. All right, thanks, buddy. We've got a great conversation coming up. Andrew Jackson, Producers Hedge, LLC, he's coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis Michelson with us.
Hello, Chip.
Let's get into this conversation right away. I don't want to waste too much time here. Andrew Jackson is with Producers Hedge, LLC, joins us right now. Andrew, how are you? How are things over on the eastern edge of the belt?
Oh, man. If it's any better, it'd take two of me to tell you about it.
Love it. Love it. What do you got for the weather going on over there today?
You know, generally pretty mild over here. We got some temps up in the 50s, so not a terrible day. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I'd take that for the middle of January. No question about it. Well, heck, I'll take what we've got. Davis, we've had to wait until now before there's any serious threat of a weather of a storm in January. This is pretty unusual for us.
Is there a threat? Chip? Chip? Is there a threat?
There is a threat. That's why there would be these weather, these winter weather advisories out there, Davis.
Where are my slippers? Get my slippers. Yeah. No, the fuzzy ones.
Let's get the fire started. Come on, let's go. I love it. Right. Hey, Andrew, give us some perspective on the way that this market traded today. I think you heard what I said. I was pretty impressed with the way the market's traded.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the action here, especially, you know, we went down close to the $14 mark on March beans. I think we got down as low as 14.03 on the overnight and really didn't stay there very long. The spreads were kind of weak to begin the day, but then maybe we got to heard some China rumors late in the day, the spreads firmed back up, and that's always what's something you like to see in a bull market. You like to see strong spreads.
Right, right. No doubt about that. I'll admit, I was working on some other stuff. I may not have heard those China rumors. What are you hearing?
Just that there were some sales. You know, this was through some of my contacts on the in the cash trade. And, you know, we'll see if it's confirmed or not through some flash, but maybe we'll see some flash sales here in the next day or two.
Right. Yeah, at midday when we were doing the morning show, the bull spreads were working like a charm in corn, and the bear spreads were going crazy in beans. Made me kind of wonder what was going on, and I didn't know if I really liked it, but the way that the spreads came back, a little bit of movement in the spreads, but not much there on soybeans. That you're exactly right. That does feel like there was some demand that slipped into this market. Pretty interesting stuff. What else are the spreads telling you right now, Andrew? And throw the corn spreads in there too.
Well, you know, let's just talk about corn first. You know, if you look right now, I mean, there seems to be a lot of demand, but yet at the same time, we've actually taken the March May out to about a 3 cent carry after I think inverting it here not too long ago. What that tells me is, you know, hey, we've probably got some demand concerns, but maybe the cash is moving up front also. And I think it's indicated here locally at least. You know, a lot of your smaller mills are full. They've dropped back to no bid. The river's showing a little bit of carry now. You know, I think that's what we're seeing out of the spreads. Of course, you look at old crop to new crop, and you've got quite the inverse now from March to Dece. I think we're looking somewhere in the 75 cent range. So that's as strong as we've seen that spread in a long time. You know, and it's the tightest balance sheet we've had in a while. So it stands to reason.
Yeah. Yeah, and everything that you
talk about. Go ahead.
I was just going to say everything that you just talked about. You could almost replace corn with soybeans and talk about what's been going on with the spreads in beans, right?
Right. I mean, so you know, one thing about the beans also, of course, we've got a huge inverse from old crop to new, and which tells us, you know, the demand is up front. Hey, we're not worried about beans for fall yet. We're worried about beans today. And I do think we're seeing some movement up front here for the guys that have beans left to sell. I think the U.S. farmer is largely sold, but we are starting to see a little bit of maybe some processors maybe bought a little bit much up front. You know, got it while the getting was good, so to speak. Now they're starting to show some carry structure into Feb, March, and even April, May.
Okay. The end users. It's something that we've been talking about. Well, there's two things that you just mentioned there, Andrew, that I want to talk about a little bit more. Let's start with the producer ownership. How is that going to influence how these beans are priced and corn is priced going forward?
Well, you know, if we look into, you know, I think we're down on the old crop for the most part. I think we're down to generally gambling bushels at this point. So I think they're going to be tough to pry. You know, if we look at new crop, you know, there's a lot of producers that, you know, maybe sold a little bit here, a little bit there, for 21 crop, kind of got a base layer on, and now that they've got a base layer on, they are not in a hurry to turn loose of a significant chunk of the rest of it, especially here before we see, I mean, we're nowhere near the planting window yet. We don't know what crop insurance price is yet, or any of those things. So I think the producer is going to be pretty reluctant here for a minute.
Yeah, I think you're right. And which gets me to the other thing that I wanted to circle back on, and that's that end user coverage. We've talked about it quite a bit on the show, and the lack of coverage. It feels like once they bite the bullet and get the coverage put in place, that's going to be another signal that, okay, maybe it's time to put a high in these markets. Is that one of the things you're watching for?
Well, I guess I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to that.
Okay.
But maybe I should be. And maybe it's just because of the end users that I'm dealing with. But could we see some capitulation? You know, absolutely. The end users that I'm seeing, you know, as far as the bean process, the bean process seem to have some coverage up front.
If we're talking about
some of the mills, they seem to be covered up front for, especially the larger mills, they seem to be covered up front here too. But that's this area, and that's not atypical of this area either. There's a lot of grain that likes to move. The calendar moves a lot of grain in January, you know, regardless of the price.
I gotcha. Okay. So instead of talking about grain movement here for just a little bit, let's talk about money movement, because there has been so much money from the specs, from the large professional trading funds, move on to the long side of the corn market, long side of the bean market. They've got to feel pretty comfortable there. And once again, I think we're seeing signs that they're going to be willing to step in and buy a dip in prices and defend those long positions, right?
Well, I think so. And I don't know if anybody else has talked about this or not, but, we've had a really strong rally. And one of the ways that I measure it is, you know, how often are we stepping back to some short-term moving averages? And for example, if you take a look at the March bean chart, I really like to follow the 5-day moving average, just because it's the bean market has tracked it really well over the last several months. On this most recent rally, we're not really even stepping back to it. Most of the time we'll have a pullback, we'll touch it, maybe even pierce it, and then we'll continue higher. But if you look over the last few months, we've been getting within a nickel, maybe a dime of the 5-day, and suddenly we take back off. So every dip, there is somebody there to buy.
That's impressive. That is really impressive. When we've got a market that has been able to attract the spec money to it like it has for so long. Talk about some of the, and I know that spec money's got to be watching the outside markets here a little bit. Talk about the influence of some of the outside markets that you might be watching, Andrew, the dollar, the crude market, anything from outside of ag that you might be watching.
Well, I think, you know, currency, obviously, I don't pay as much attention to the U.S. dollar index as maybe a lot of people do, but I do watch the Brazilian real. I think that's important. The euro is important. The dollar index is important for wheat. Just not a lot. We're not a big wheat area. So, you know, right. I pay a lot of attention to the Argentine peso, pay a lot of attention to the Brazilian real. And the general trend in both of those currencies is it incentivizing production in those areas.
Yeah.
How fast will that production, you know, be there? Well, it doesn't happen overnight. We've got growing seasons, agronomy to deal with there. But those are definitely the things that we want to be watching, and probably, you know, in my mind, the most important.
Yeah. And some of the official estimates out of Brazil are starting to slide down. Argentina's starting to slide down. But it feels like the official estimates are behind what may be already factored into the market.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think for the most part, the trend in Brazil is that, hey, it's not maybe going to reach its full potential, but it's maybe not going to be a disaster either. It seems like we're hovering, you know, either side of 130 on the Brazilian soybean crop. Who knows where that's actually going to land. I wish I did, but
yeah.
We'll see. The timing is as important as anything.
Hey, man, aren't you paying attention to Fox Business and CNBC? They're talking about the big reason for the rally is because of the bad weather down in South America.
Yeah,
it's gotta be a disaster.
Told me earlier.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Andrew, when we come back, we've got a lot of ground that we need to cover yet. Let's kick it off with an acreage discussion when we come back. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. China imported record amounts of soybeans and meat in 2020. We've been talking about that for about 8 months now. Argentine farmers strike ends. The exchange lowers Argentine corn crop forecast and raises the wheat crop estimate. Biden is expected to unveil his COVID aid and stimulus package tonight. The Wall Street Journal reported China ended the year of COVID in many ways stronger than it started. A China delegation reportedly could visit Washington in early days of the Biden administration. The U.S. port backlog of container ships rivals historic lines at Brazilian soybean export locations right now. Asian bird flu outbreak is the worst since the early 2000s, and softer cash cattle trade is just starting to pick up on the numbers. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Delaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Delaro Complete from Bayer.
This long-distance dedication is going out to the good doctor, Jim Smith, over there, welcoming a new friend to the family. There's Nickelback is always welcome here on AgriTalk. Davis. Nickelback is always welcome here on AgriTalk.
No comment from the peanut gallery.
Come on, man. Fun hater. That's what you are. We're having a conversation with Andrew Jackson today, Producers Hedge. Before we get back to Andrew, let's go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Oh, let's do. March, HRW wheat, 10¾ cents higher, 636.5 today. March soft red jumped 9.5 cents to 670. March corn futures 9¾ cents higher, 534¼. May corn jumped a dime, 537¾. March soybean futures 24¼ cents higher today, 1430.5. May beans up 24 cents, 1427¾. March cotton was 20 ticks higher, 81.12. February live cattle futures 17½ cents lower at 112.07½. March feeders down 95 cents, 133.37½. And February lean hog futures 55 cents lower, 66.30. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right, Davis, thank you very much. Andrew Jackson, Producers Hedge, LLC, joins us today. We're deep into the conversation, and I want to take us deeper into the year ahead here, Andrew. Had a question from Paul come in. He wanted to know, and I don't know if we're going to see this all the way, but I get what he's talking about, because the November 21 bean contract came within a penny of 12 bucks today. And Paul basically is wondering, can we see that new crop 21 bean contract get up to the levels that we're seeing in, say, the July contract, something like that, as that market's trying to buy acres?
Are we going to see it during planting time? I don't think so. I think the market's job right now is to ration the supplies up front. But the good thing is if we see the November rise to, say, where the July is currently, you know, July I'm looking at 14.13 right now. If we look up one day and the November is at 14.13, you're going to be very happy with where the July is.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So we don't see it catch up, but that doesn't take the strength away from that new crop contract. I get exactly what you're saying. That's good. That's good. So what have you put together an acreage number for 21, Andrew?
Well, I kind of keep track of what the USDA says. We can look at the USDA baseline. And if we look back over the last decade, the most acres that we've realized combined corn and bean has been 180.4. And I think that was back in 2017.
Yeah.
This past year, we're down to 173.9. So we need, I think, a minimum of 180 million acres combined. And really, I think we need more than that, because at 180, I think we have no room for error. And, you know, at least unless, you know, we're going to see major pickups in other areas of the world. But domestically, I still think we need 100. We need 181 plus. You know, the USDA baseline right now is showing 179. I've seen some private estimates as high as 182. 182 obviously gives us a little bit more buffer, but still we don't need any slip-ups, and we don't need any prevent plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. If all we get to is 180, and I can't believe I just said that, if all we get to is 180, one of those crops, corn or soybeans, is going to be left 2 million acres short of where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and typically, I mean, if you're going to lose one, it's probably because of a late spring, you're probably going to lose corn acres, and you probably pick up some bean acres.
Right, right. But with the amount of field work that was done this last fall, Andrew, I keep coming back to this. It just feels to me like a big corn number has already been locked in because of all the work that was done in the fall, the opportunities that are already being offered out there on the new crop. I mean, where did the Deese 21 close at today? I had it right in front of me here just a second ago. Here we go. 457.75 is bidding for corn, or is bidding for acres more than $12 beans, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna matter a little bit where you're at and your logistics and such and such. You know, what are your, if you've got a field that you've already got your inputs on it for corn, then yeah, that's gonna lean right. Pretty heavy corn. You're probably not going to change that. But you know, if you've got, you know, storage issues, maybe there's a reason, because there's no carry in the bean market. So if it's a crop that you're gonna have to bring to town, maybe you do go heavy beans. Because they're, I mean, we've got some really good basis levels here, at least on the Ohio River, and there is no incentive to be storing beans unless you just logistically have to.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a whole lot easier to move a bean. Most times it's a whole lot easier to move a bean crop than it is to move a corn crop if you're up against the clock on some things. You mentioned the inputs there, Andrew. A lot of input commitment has already been made for next year, but what if you haven't? Do you maintain flexibility, or do you get some stuff booked?
Well, you know, Davis is probably going to know the pricing and be able to tell you a little bit more about the market than me. He's going to be better qualified. But what I will tell you is that if you're thinking about growing more corn, other people are probably thinking about growing more corn. If you sell a crop today, but you don't have your inputs locked in, you didn't lock in any margin.
Yep. Yep.
In fact, you're taking on another level of risk.
Risk. That's right. That's right. Don't do that. Don't add to the risk. You're already facing enough risk. So if you're keep managing it as you go along here. When we talk about inputs and we talk about pricing opportunities, at this time of the year, Andrew, how far out are you willing to look? Do you look all the way out to 22 crop?
Personally, I'm not. Maybe that's a mistake. I do think that at some point we will need to turn our heads there. But I mean, we just look at the inverse right now. The inverse is you know, I think from the 21 Deese 21 to Deese 22 is somewhere in the, you know, 45-50 cent range. I don't have it here in front of me, but it's, you know, it's pretty steep right now. So mm-hmm. I don't recommend, because you can't lock in inputs that far. Right. So again, you're taking on more risk if you're selling a crop that you can't, you know, lock in the inputs with. But I do think you have to at least keep track of that. And when the front end, at some point, we will see a sell-off, and maybe maybe that's 2 years from now. But typically, when that front end starts to sell off, the back end is not as reactive, and maybe that's your opportunity to start selling something deferred.
Right. Okay. Andrew, one of the things that we've been talking about, going back to the acres a little bit, one of the things that we've been talking about is which crops are going to engage or be a part of the acreage battle in 2021. It feels like cotton is there now, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, we've had a big rip to the upside. So it may be just a little bit of a good, you know, good fundamental news there to get people excited here, maybe betting on the come a bit too. So
right. Yeah, and if sorghum will participate and spring wheat will participate in this, that's the kind of situation that you want to look for your opportunities, but at the same time, you don't want to wrap things up before we get to the end of February and the spring price, right?
Yeah, no, I think you I'm not going to tell anybody that the market can't go lower through the pricing, but before planning through the crop insurance pricing period, because it can happen. Look where we were last year. Right. We had COVID come along. There's a black swan. I mean, nobody knows those things are coming before they come, right? They just appear out of thin air. So it can happen. Fundamentally, I do feel like there is a little bit of a floor under the market, though, because the balance sheet is just very fragile right now.
Mm-hmm. Any other crops going to participate in this acreage battle for the year ahead, Andrew? I mean, we talk about the big ones, you know, the ones that have got supply and demand tables out there from USDA. But what about some specialty crops that might make an effort to get some acres?
Well, I think, if we talk about within that balance sheet, you know, for example, let's talk within the corn balance sheet, within the soybean balance sheet, let's talk non-GMO, for example, or even white corn.
Okay.
You know, I do think that there, in typically in low price years, we have, there's an abundance of acres of those premium grains because there's a premium to be paid, right? So growers are grasping for premium. They're trying to get every penny that they can get. In years like this, you lose a lot of those what I call wildcat acres, guys that are just growing to spec the market because, hey, why mess with a finicky crop like white corn and stress cracks when I can make money just growing number two yellow or growing non-GMO? Is it worth growing non-GMO corn for a 25-cent premium, at $5 corn versus $3.50 corn? What I take from that is that if I'm a buyer, I want to get my hand wrapped around that premium now. If you're a grower and your buyer isn't showing you a premium, I think it's a good idea to reach out to them and be proactive on it. Say, hey, I'd really like to grow this crop. Here are my other options. This is what I'd like to have because maybe you got a little bit of leverage.
That is good thinking right there, Andrew. Because it's kind of counterintuitive in all of that, but I get exactly what you were saying on some of these identity preserved or specialty crops, whatever you want to call it, that the end users, if they want it, they better get it locked up for the year ahead. I love that. I love that a lot. Andrew, thank you, man. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're welcome back anytime you want to come on here, no doubt. All right, that is Andrew Jackson. He is with Producers Hedge, LLC. When we come back, Davis and I are going to take a look at the notes that I put together. We're going to take a look at the weather forecast. We've got a lot to do yet right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, you know what a guy could do on a day like this when it's just kind of wet and yucky and middle of January kind of weather?
I don't know. Play your Nickelback records, I guess, what? Maybe.
Yeah, get the vinyl out. Is that what you're saying?
Get
the records out. No, no. Well, you could do that. And why wouldn't you do that? But the other thing that you could do is you could check out farmjournalfielddays.com.
Oh-ho.
It's still out there. Uh-huh. And the content is still excellent. And if you haven't checked it out yet, there is still an opportunity to go to farmjournalfielddays.com and check out everything that's there, including Machinery Pete, go into the Machinery Pete Pavilion, take a look around at what's going on in there. You've got the main stage, the expo hall. There's a lot to take in at farmjournalfielddays.com, and please be sure to do that. You know, we have, over the last couple of weeks here, Davis, as everyone is watching what's happening with this grain market.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the you've got part of the farming population that says, wow, it's time to get some of this stuff off, even on 21, and we need to get our inputs booked, because if corn price is going to trade over $5, fertilizer prices are going to follow it to the upside.
Yes.
There's some truth to that, isn't there?
I'm afraid so. I could go to Twitter. Our old pal Josh Linville. Now, this is – okay, so this is from yesterday. We'll do a couple here. From
Stone
yesterday,
X, right?
Josh Linville from StoneX, at JLinvilleFert on Twitter. Okay. January 13, even without the ongoing CVD case, that's countervailing duty case.
Right.
That's the Russia-Morocco thing. We could be looking at tight supplies. World physical inventories are very snug, as China has not been a world participant. Coupled with a huge fall that drained the system and ongoing demand with grain prices rising, .. he finishes, it's the perfect storm. Now,
wow.
Let's put some numbers on that. Just 4 hours ago, again from Josh Linville at StoneX, the hashtag urea run-up continues today. Get this. And he's talking wholesale here. So this is wholesale.
Okay.
December 17, the urea NOLA midpoint was $244, okay? $244.
Okay.
Today, urea NOLA trading $325 for physical. NOLA urea up $75+ in a 30-day period. And, .. it doesn't look like it's done, he says.
Right. Interesting.
Tough spot here. I mean, and you're exactly right. It's great. Let's all celebrate, mm-hmm. you know, some profitable levels for our
grains. But it's creating risk on the other side.
Our beans. It's absolutely creating risk ripples. I might start calling it ripples of risk.
Right.
That sounds like a book
yesterday
title.
We talked about Newton's third law. For each action and equal and opposite reaction. And you can kind of equate that over to what's going to happen in the, or what could happen in this fertilizer market. If you do see corn prices sustain in this level, and it will pull that. Okay, I'm just going to say it. I'm looking at a chart that I got from Clark Neighbors. Okay, BIS Commodities. Closing basis only, looking at the trend in corn prices now for the July 21 contract compared to the price trends and closes in the July 2008 corn contract.
Okay.
2008, everybody will remember, was the year that the inflation trade really took off. Mm-hmm. And the similarities are unbelievable.
Really?
Unbelievable. If this thing continues, and if we see some of the same supply-side constraints that happened following 2008, I'm going to throw 2009 out of it. 2009 might still be part of the problems that we're still dealing with, because that crop was so far overestimated on the corn side of things that we still might be dealing with some of the issues from that. But if we continue to follow that pattern that we saw developing in 2008, you'll remember. I mean, when you were there to start the inputs monitor in 2012, we looked back as far as we could, and you go to that 2008 high, 2009 high, that's where the top left of the top left, bottom right trend on the charts started.
Yes, that's where it started. Yep.
That's where it started. And I don't know if we're heading back to that.
I was going to say 2021 might be where it ends.
Oh, boy.
It's looking like it.
Something?
That's what everybody's saying. It's what it feels like. And the fundamentals are lining up with the two. And then you add a dash of, you know, some trade uncertainty from major exporting countries. China's not in the market. Big demand at fall.
Right.
It all adds up. It all adds up to the same thing.
Gotcha. Very good. Very good. Okay. Real quick, let's take a look at the National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for January 20th through the 24th. Right in the middle of the country, looking at normal temperature outlook. We've got above normal temperatures expected in the eastern Corn Belt, all the way up into Michigan on that as well. You got to get out to western Nebraska, far western Kansas, before you get into the below normal temperatures for the Corn Belt. But when we talk about precipitation for January 20th through the 24th, we are talking about above normal precipitation throughout and across the Corn Belt. The below normal temperatures move in for January 22nd through the 28th. This is in the 8 to 14 day forecast. Covers up the northern production areas down into central Missouri, the northern half of Kansas, and all the way over for the northern half of Illinois as well. Normal temperatures to the east of that. And it looks like above normal precipitation expected over the bulk of the Corn Belt at that time. So
sounds like a great time to snuggle up with somebody you love under a heat lamp somewhere in the corner of the barn, maybe.
Huh? Why not? Absolutely. All right. Hey, for Davis and for producer Big Apple Joe, thanks for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we got the free-for-all. Tomorrow afternoon, Brian Doherty and Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson right here on AgriTalk.